And so, as I was saying, he especially remembers his childhood heroes, like Truman Capote, his first literary model, race car champion Mark Donohue, and Norman Jaffe, the notorious architect. Now, all of them a part of that clear as a warm summer afternoon baseball game, and Carl Yastrzemski. Jeff Gaiman, journalist, book author, ex-pitcher, joins us today to chat about his upcoming talk at the Bethlehem Public Library, September 28th at 7 p.m. Yasmataz, Carl Yastrzemski's folk hero, role model, and pop icon. Jeff will discuss Yaz's Hall of Fame career, his famous fans, and his appearances on TV. Gaiman's most recent book, Kingdom of the Kid, Growing Up in the Long-Lost Hamptons, is a brilliant pilgrimage to a special place at a special time that taught that kid how to be special. You're listening to WDIY 88.1 Allentown, Lehigh Valley Arts Salon. I remain George Miller, and along with my wife and co-host, Kate Scuffle, our chat today is very special indeed with our good friend, our favorite journalist and author, art collector, connoisseur, music aficionado, and caretaker of the extraordinary dog, the book-eating dog, Jake, and an all-around illuminating guy to be with on any art-filled evening. Carl, welcome very much to our friend Jeff Gaiman.
Thank you, George and Kate. How do I overcome that?
I don't know.
But thank you. It's good to be saloning again. And thank you very much for stretching the salon from arts to baseball. I appreciate that.
Yes.
Well, as an author talking about writing and baseball and inspiration, it's all one. So, Bethlehem Public Library, the conversation. How did this start?
My favorite library on earth. I've been going there for many, many moons, especially since I left the Morning Call in 2009. I'm there pretty much 6 days a week. You know, I have a table there, a plaque there. My dog has a bowl there, should have a bowl there. My favorite folks, great resources, especially great human resources. One of the desk people, one of the research people is Mary Jane or MJ Carabin, and she set up this talk. She also happens to be a not-so-closet Red Sox fan from long ago, so we just had to do it. They had me back in 2013. For a talk about the Kingdom of the Kid. Okay. So we're making a nice circular run since the Kingdom of the Kid has a chapter on Carl Yastrzemski, also known, most familiarly known as Yaz.
Yes, thank goodness, because I have a difficult time saying his last name.
Can you imagine how people have spelling his last name?
Exactly. So I can call him Yaz. So.
Oh, we're going to go from Yaz from this point on.
Yeah. Okay.
So to go back to that Kingdom of the Kid, What was it about Carl Yastrzemski?
Clear as a bell.
The role he played in your childhood. Yeah.
It's the winter of 1966, and my dad, Larry, and I are out on the eastern end of Long Island supervising the construction of our house in Waynescott, which is just two hamlets east of Bridgehampton, where Yaz grew up. And we stop on School Street in Bridgehampton, right outside the Yastrzemski family home, where Carl and Hattie, his parents, are still living. And my dad knew that I'd been playing baseball for 3 or 4 years. I was about to enter my first Little League season. So he started to tell me a little parable about this guy, young Carl Yastrzemski, trying to turn himself into a major league hitter when he was a kid. And my dad is telling me all these kind of superhero comic tales about this guy who, among other things, in the winter, when he's 12, 13, goes out into the garage behind the house. He's in a sheepskin coat. He's swinging a lead bat at a tennis ball suspended from the ceiling 1,000 times a night. So A, it built up his muscles. B, built up his hand-eye coordination and his speed. Also things he had uncles who played on a same family baseball team as he did. Mm. And they would throw him tennis balls, and he would hit them with a sawed-off bat from 45 feet away instead of 60 feet. Wow. So by the time he was in high school, he was a killer fastball hitter. Mm. And my dad, who was an advertising man on Madison Avenue and the son of a Mennonite preacher, he's telling me this story to say, hey, this is a guy you can look up to when during your first Little League season. I did. Practiced with a lead bat. Threw tennis balls at a garage door to an imaginary Yaz. Had a great season, and I was primed for Yaz's legendary 67 season.
Wow.
My dad did good.
Yeah, your dad did good. Do you think Dad wanted you to be a baseball player, like a pro?
Like, well, yes and no. I think he wanted me to be an advertising salesman.
Oh, I see.
Too. He definitely wanted me to be a writer because he was a terrific writer. You know, he loved to talk about jumping words through hoops, and that's what I've always tried to do, too. Mm. But I ended up pitching for 12 years into college, Lafayette, and had a great time doing it. Loved the strategy, especially the batter-pitcher dynamics. And I learned a lot about pitching to an imaginary Yaz at that garage door.
Mm. I didn't realize you pitched that long. That's interesting.
I did 12 years. Yeah, had a great curveball. Could throw it at a batter's, you know what, derriere, and have it curve over the outside of the plate. It was a very big curveball.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
So the Red Sox could do no harm.
Well, here's the deal. My dad was very kind to me. He set me up with a hero, a role model. But he didn't tell me how bad the Red Sox were at this time. They were called the Dead Sox because in Yaz's previous six seasons, they had lost 100 games more than they won. And Yaz had a lot of talent, but is very erratic. He had won a batting title one year, thrown out a lot of runners from left field at Fenway Park. Fenway Park has a 37-foot-high green-painted wall called the Green Monster. Mm-hmm. And no one could play the Green Monster like Yaz. I've said it before, I'll say it again. He played caroms off that wall, which had rivets and tin and wood, like a high lie master.
Mm.
So he was erratic. The Sox had a bad season. But in the off season, he had time. He didn't have to go to college anymore. He worked out with a former trainer for the Hungarian Olympic boxing team. He ran a boot camp for Yaz. He came back stronger, faster. Red Sox had a great new rookie manager, some great new rookie talent. And then all of a sudden, for the first time since 1949, the Sox were in a pennant race. Yaz was hitting home runs like never before. In July, he'd already eclipsed his season record of 20 home runs on his way to the first Triple Crown, actually the last Triple Crown for a long time. To be on the South Fork of Long Island in the summer where he grew up, was off the chart electric. Everywhere you went, the beach, the post office, the restaurants, the parties, yes, this. Even the store where I bought my Monster magazines, they were, you know, babbling about Yaz.
Yeah.
Just off the chart electric. Exactly.
Wow, there you have it, folks. Listeners, some of that stuff that Jeff just told you is not in the book.
Some of the stuff that's in the book. Is my dad really embraced the fact that his son had a cause outside himself for the first time. Mm. And he built me a pitcher's mound in our backyard out of sand, dirt, and the pitcher's rubber was two bricks.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad would catch me kneeling on a garden cushion in his Bermuda shorts with a martini and a cocktail glass by his left leg. And I'm very proud to say that while I once broke his toe with the pitch, I never broke the glass. My dad also treated me quite a bit. There was a restaurant in Bridgehampton called the Village Restaurant, run by a high school teammate of Yaz, a pitcher named Billy DePetre, very salty, peppery guy. And my dad would take me there. He would have beers. I'd have Shirley Temples.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd listen to Billy's great stories. And Billy was so gaga about the Sox, coming from Nowheresville, from Davy Jones' locker to a pennant race, he went to the local 5 and 10 store and bought the entire summer stock of Red Sox and hung them around his restaurant as Red Sox pennants. Can you imagine being there?
Man, wow, yes, I could imagine. That must have been magical.
Yeah. I have to ask you, too. Everybody out there has, in baseball land, has favorite players. So, George and Kate, who were your heroes in baseball growing up?
Well, mine was a catcher named Stan LaPater for the Philadelphia Phillies. And this is, of course, back in the 50s and 60s. And Richie Ashburn.
Oh.
I think because the Phillies are so close to us, that's the team that I adopted. What was your exchange?
For me, I have two tales quickly. One, first of all, coming from Pittsburgh and the Pirates, and the same kind of like many years of not really doing well. 1960. I'm a baby in a stroller. We're there. But the family story says that the first thing I ever read was a Beat 'em Bucks bumper sticker. And as they rolled me around in the stroller, I would point them out on cars and things going, Beat 'em Bucks, Beat 'em Bucks. Favorite player, Roberto Clemente, my hero.
Can't beat them. I mean, Richie Ashburn and Roberto Clemente, very hard to beat. I'll talk about this a bit further along the line, but I like to say that, Italians still idolize Joe DiMaggio. For Jews, nothing better. Sandy Koufax delivered them to the promised land. Roberto Clemente for Puerto Ricans, Latinos, and Pittsburghites in general. Mm-hmm. And for the rest of us, Poles and German English people like me, it's yes. And I'll tell you more about that, why that.
Good. Jeff, I need to interrupt just for a moment and ask our sound engineer, Steve Aronson, who his favorite baseball player was.
Well, I grew up in New York, and the New York Giants were still there. And of course, I grew up loving Willie Mays.
Oh, yeah.
But my favorite ball player of all time is actually Ted Williams, the greatest hitter I ever saw. And I have one really fond memory from him because I wrote to him and asked him for an autographed picture, and he sent me one.
Perfect. Really? It's a great segue because Steve's hero, Ted Williams, was succeeded in left field by Carl Yastrzemski.
Oh, was he really? Yeah.
Now, today, Yaz is a very reluctant fellow, doesn't come out in public very often, doesn't do many interviews. He'll go back to Fenway Park in Boston for celebrations like the 50th anniversary of the Dream Team, the Impossible Dream Team. He did that, last month. But he was groomed to go from a second baseman to play left field, and he just made it his own. He was much better fielder than Ted Williams ever was, but he could never compare to Ted Williams as a hitter, the legendary hitter, the splendid splitter.
A lot of nicknames. Huh?
And Yaz, one of the many reasons he's well known, besides that legendary 67 season, is that everybody remembers Yaz, just like everybody remembers Yogi. It's those Y words or something about them.
So do you have a Yaz baseball card? You have something better, I think.
I have something better.
Yeah.
So 1968, he's had the 67 season. He's won the Triple Crown, leading the American League in homers, batting average, and runs batted in. Only 15 Triple Crowns have been won in the more than 100 years of baseball. The Red Sox make the World Series. They lose to the Cardinals. It breaks my heart. I cry for the first time at a sporting event. Comes back in 68, wins a batting title again. Only American leaguer to hit over 300 full-time. My dad and I, after the season, we stopped by the Yastrzemski family home on School Street. Carl Sr. is raking leaves. My dad, being a gregarious advertising dude, says, let's talk to him. We talk to him. His wife makes us pie and coffee. Then my father invites Yastrzemski's parents to dinner at our house in Waynescott.
Yes.
And my mom, English mom, doesn't know much about baseball. First game ever, Polo Grounds, 1957, with my dad. She was wearing white gloves. Doesn't know who Willie Mays was. My mom goes out and she buys the best china from the best, decorating store in the Hamptons. She buys ham because all Polish people dig ham. And the Yastrzemskis bring me two souvenirs signed by their son. One is a baseball. Yep. The other one I have right here. Mm-hmm. Can we show it on the radio?
Yes, we can show it on the radio. Look at that, folks.
It's a signed
circa
photograph.
1968. The lovely tinted coloring from that era.
And his signature is still very clear.
Very clear.
He's cut into the paper.
He's smiling. He didn't smile much in photos. He's got two bats across his shoulder, leaning up against the batting cage. He looks like a man who conquered the world, which he did.
Yes, of course. Well, that's a joyous souvenir. We're going to tell more about the other souvenir that you got in just a moment. And we shall chat more about the fantastically adventurous red apple-eating Jeff Gaiman after this rather more relaxed message, or as you out there in Radio Land like to hear it, after this salient message.
Mm-hmm.
For program support on WDIY, we thank the Baum School of Art, 510 Linden Street, Allentown, enriching lives through arts education for the past 90 years. Classes in art, design, and fashion for children, teens, and adults. For more information, baumschool.org or 610-433-0032.
We're back. This is Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I'm George Miller and Kate Scuffle. I'm both of those people. Mm-hmm. And
we're still salient.
Yes, we're still salient. And our guest today is Jeff Gaiman. And he's, of course, going to, it's not a talk, it's not a lecture, it's a recollection, I think, a beautiful memory of Yasmataz. Huh?
Multimedia. we're actually going to... The thing about Yaz is that he's not only a Hall of Fame baseball player, first ballot in 1989. He not only shares the in second place for most years with one team, with Brooks Robinson, 23. Sam Musso played for the Cardinals for 24. But he has had this great afterlife, the Yaz name, the legendary 67 season, the fact that he lasted 23 years and played in so many memorable, pivotal games. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about a guy who starred in commercials for Miller Beer after he retired. And at the library on Thursday, we're going to show a YouTube video of that.
Oh, I see. Oh, wonderful.
We're also going to show a YouTube video, wonderful video, of an early 70s ad he did for Aquavelva.
Ooh, yes.
Now, Yaz had this kind of no-nonsense persona. He always said he played like a machine, didn't want to let the other team show his weaknesses, show his weaknesses to the other team. So the Aquavelva commercial, he's batting in the batting cage, comes walking toward the viewer, and he basically says, I like this fragrance because it doesn't smell. It doesn't smell too much. Mm-hmm. It's a man's fragrance. You know, it's affordable. if you want to, you know, smell like a man, play like a man, you know, put Aquavelva on. So I got to ask viewers out there, you and Kate and George especially, do you remember Maypo?
Yes, Maypo.
Yes.
So the maple-flavored oatmeal.
Yep.
That in the late 60s was advertised by Joe Namath, Mickey Mantle, right. And in 1969 with his mom, Kari Yastrzemski.
Uh-huh.
So the story, there was a great Sports Illustrated story about pitching products by celebrity sports people. And Frank DeFord, who died this year, great sports writer, wrote about Yaz. And he had to be fortified during the morning Manhattan shoot with beers. And he also had to be fortified with artificial tears because they had so many takes.
Yeah.
He just couldn't manufacture the tears as he cried to his mom, I want my maple! And if you knew Kari Yastrzemski, totally, you know, opposite to his personality. So he was quite the pitch man. He also did Yaz Kilbasi, my favorite of all time. And Dennis Leary, the comedian, writer, Ford pitch man, will agree because he idolized Yaz growing up in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. Both Dennis and I, in 1968, started eating Big Yaz Special Fitness white bread.
Oh.
This was tied to, you know, his great season.
Uh-huh.
So my mom, English mom, bought it for me, even though it was about as nutritious as doughy pulp. And it tasted about as good as sawdust. And Bill Spaceman Lee, crazy philosopher pitcher on the Red Sox with Yaz, came up with a better line. He said it tasted as good as a golf ball. But I didn't care.
It's kind of like Wonder Bread gone bad. Yeah. Oh, when Wonder Bread goes bad. Yeah.
And, you know, of the things that I read in the book about Yaz, to this day, you know, I rented The Shining to see where Carl Yastrzemski was, and I really missed it, I think.
Well, it comes up very quickly. First of all, Stephen King did not have a Carl Yastrzemski bat in the book.
I see.
That's the doing of the co-authors, including Stanley Kubrick. But when you see Shelley Duvall swinging a bat at Jack Nicholson to scare this crazy writer husband away, if you read, slow down the footage, The signature is Kali Stremsky.
Oh, I see.
Okay. He pops up in other, you know, significant
I was going to say, once you've appeared in The Simpsons, you're really kind of a cultural icon for it.
Well, I like to say, you know, he's the only Hall of Famer who's appeared as a baseball card shadow of himself in The Simpsons. A couple episodes where Bart and Milhouse are going to buy, they have to decide, are they going to buy a super-duper comic or are they going to buy a... Or is Milhouse going to buy his favorite Kali Stremsky baseball card from 1973? It will be on exhibit during my talk on Thursday. And we love the 73 Yaz card because he had unusually long sideburns. This was when baseball was turning to double knits, mm-hmm. and the African-American players were, you know, having, you know, bush froze and all that. Decor, yes. Dress was changing. So the Simpsons writers who grew up in Boston, went to Harvard, loved Yaz, and they made fun of his 73 baseball card. And we love that card too.
And Cheers? I didn't know he appeared on Cheers.
Cheers is set in a Boston bar.
Of course.
You know, Ted Danson, who played Sam the bartender,
right.
was an ex-Sox pitcher. And the legend goes that he was on Yaz's team.
Okay.
So Diane has an English boyfriend who wants to ditch her for a date and go to a Kali Stremsky testimonial dinner at $1,000 a plate. And Yaz makes a brief cameo appearance with Ted Danson and Nick, the actor who played the bartender.
Okay.
Dick Alessante. So actually, another favorite episode to show you his reach is that he appeared. He was basically the star of an episode at the end of the fourth season of Rescue Me, which was co-written by Dennis Leary. In the episode, Dennis Leary, who plays a very crazy, off-the-wall firefighter, and his father are attending a minor league baseball game, and they're reminiscing about the Sox dream team and Yaz's heroics in 67. And they sing a bar of the man they call Yaz, which was set to the Alleluia chorus.
Oh.
Kali Stremsky, Kali Stremsky. And I think the line goes, although the name Yastrzemski is difficult, it fits nicely in a Hall of Fame. I'll get it right somehow. Anyway.
Yeah.
So he's been around the horn, Mr.
Of course. Yeah.
So I have to say, I mean, I was terribly caught up as a child with the Pirates' fate and not paying enough attention, clearly. Yastrzemski's appeal sounds to me like it's partly his story, the person, the performance, but also tied in so much with the Red Sox.
It's
heartbreaking.
It's come out that in 67, this tribe called Red Sox Nation really began.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there were plenty of other players on the Red Sox who led them to the World Series. It's just that Yastrzemski was the most prominent one, mm-hmm. who seemed to come to in the clutch, deliver in the clutch all the time. Last two games of the season, 7 hits and 8 at bats, and they win on the last game of the year. So, you know, the Red Sox were so bad, and he delivered them to the promised land. Other things, too. Here's a guy who grew up a potato farmer's son in Bridgehampton. Very humble beginnings. His dad, who probably at this time back in the late 50s had never made more than $10,000 a year, demanded over $100,000 and full tuition for his son. That's how he got to the Red Sox. Phillies could have signed him. They didn't pony up the money or the tuition. Mm-hmm. The name, Yaz, special. The great hitting style with his hands held high and the elbow cocked at his ear. And swinging, a vicious swing that Kirk Gowdy, the broadcaster, once said, like he was swinging at a snake, trying to kill a snake.
Oh, I see.
The longevity of the career, the loyalty to one team, mm-hmm. 23 years, and sort of the reclusiveness, too. He doesn't wear out his welcome, gives few interviews. So he's still kind of a mystical guy, and yet a very familiar, you know, sort of lunch pail legend guy.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm just always intrigued with when sports figures kind of cross over that line from the appeal or the following of a person who's truly, a hardcore sports person and becomes something more, something iconic, which he clearly is.
Yes, indeed.
And how that happens.
Some of the folks I've interviewed who are Yaz, diehard Yaz fans, there's a sports psychologist out in San Francisco who ranks Yaz along with Martin Luther King Jr. and Abe Lincoln as his heroes. There's a fellow here in Bethlehem, former supervisor for Bethlehem Steel, Fred McGinney, who'll be providing the Yaz memorabilia on Thursday. Mm-hmm. He was an Army intelligence officer in Vietnam when he became a Yaz fan. He says Yaz's work ethic and heroics kept him sane and inspired in Vietnam. And I interviewed a lawyer who, when she was the president of Southern Vermont College, during her inaugural address, she referenced Yaz's number 8 uniform number with the fact that she was the 8th president in the history of the college.
Yeah.
Goes far. And one of my favorite former postmen at the 4th Street branch of the post office, a block from here, Yankees fan, admired Yastrzemski.
Uh-huh. So you find out more and more people are fans.
Yes.
Yeah. We do want to mention that all of these lectures, or that's what some people call them, I like to call them talking adventures, are really dedicated to your late mom, Pat Gaiman.
Mm-hmm. My mom, an extraordinary person, an English person, big reach on all sorts of folks, died in June at 94, still very spunky at 94. I dedicated to her because, among other things, she bought me big Yaz special fitness white bread. She followed all my games, came to most of the games that I pitched in. The next book that I'm writing is all about adventures with my mom. How do you keep a senior in the game during her late innings? You give her white wood rafting at 92. You try to give her a marijuana brownie. Didn't quite work out that way. We got around to marijuana cookies. And my favorite adventure, one of them, was last fall. We went around the rural Lehigh Valley and planted hyacinth bulbs, her favorite flower,
yes,
all around the valley. And the spring, we went back to those places, including her tombstone in Zionsville, and we saw them bloom. And it was, minor miracles all around. It would have been much sadder had she not seen that then. Having her die.
Right.
The name of the book, by the way, which I'm writing, is Planet Mom.
Planet Mom.
Keeping an Aging Parent from Aging.
A glorious one. We want to remind folks that Jeff is also the author of a 1998 novel, Down But Not Quite Out in Hollyweird, about Eric Knight and the letters. And that also in 2013, of course, is The Kingdom of the Kid Growing Up in the Long Lost Hamptons. And we're looking forward to the next book. The chat at the Bethlehem Public Library is Thursday, this Thursday, September the 28th, at 11 West Church Street. You can find out more by just going on site.
And it's at 7 p.m. at the library.
Yes. That's right. Refreshments and memorabilia. And video.
And video.
True multimedia.
Jeff, we love you. Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, lovely to have you. Have me. Thank you very much for the extended time.
All right. And we want to say special thanks to our sound engineer, Steve Aronson. He's our great technical engineer whose favorite baseball team is the Iron Pigs and the Mets. Steve's manipulation of the soundboard is likely likened to the calculated pitching throws of both of those teams and is as welcome as a World Series win. Thanks, Uncle Stevie.
You're welcome, George. Yeah. Great to see you, Jeff.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Art Salon on WDIY Allentown, the Lehigh Valley's community NPR station and your source for NPR news, public affairs, and a great mix of hand-picked music. It's currently 90 degrees, headed down to 65 overnight. Time is approaching 6:30. That means it's time to take charge. Nope, it's not time to take charge of your life. It's time for more Lehigh Valley Arts Salon.